This is Season 7 of the Team Roping Journal's podcast, The Score, the show that started it all in the whole podcasting game in Team Roping and Rodeo. At 3 million downloads and counting, this is where Team Ropers talk, from our weekly short score episodes to the longer sit-down conversations that we get to have that dive deep into the personalities, producers, and horses that inspire the sport. This is where Team Ropers get their must-know information. Hey everyone, it's Chelsea Schaefer. Welcome back to The Score. Today is an episode where we're going to learn a little bit about both the saddle business and the rope horse business. It has been a while since I've had a saddle maker on this podcast. So in the spirit of so much that we've been talking about lately, I brought on Jody Raymer, who works for Genuine Billy Cook Saddles. He's got the Jody Raymer line of saddles for Genuine Billy Cook Saddles. He's also an AQHA professional horseman, an AQHA world champion, and a very regular judge of the rope horse futurities when he can sneak off from the saddle shop to judge some of the American Rope Horse Futurity Association events, including the world championships. So today's episode, we go over Jody's career as a saddle maker and a horse trainer, because one informs the other. And so there's a lot to go over. Jody started with Billy Cook Saddles back in the early 90s, as he's going to tell us. So he goes over kind of his career as a saddle maker with the company and out on his own, because he spent some time out on his own before coming back to Billy Cook to be part of their rebranding, their rebirth of the company. And so he's working a lot with Tate Kirkenschlager, who we've got a whole series of videos and instruction coming out that I'm pretty excited for you all to hear and see, because, wow, we learned a lot in about 10 hours in the arena with Tate one day. So anyway, I hope you all enjoy this podcast. Let us know what you think in the reviews and the comments in the podcast, because it's been a little while since we've reminded you to go in and review. So without further ado, Jody Raymer from Genuine Billy Cook Saddlery. Today's episode is brought to you by Genuine Billy Cook Saddles, the finest handmade saddles in tack at the fairest prices, world famous since 1953. I'll tell you more about their relaunched business model at the commercial break. But until then, you can find out more at genuinebillycook.com. Well, Jody, thank you. Give me your background. You are a horse trainer. Do you still train horses?
Yeah, I still train some, but mainly just for myself now. I went to work for Mr. Cook in 1990. The end of 1990. Which then, as far as my history goes, I mean, like everybody else, you know, we were rodeoing some and jackpotting and so forth, but no horse showing really at that time. I didn't start showing horses till about 92-ish, I think. I guess I'm wrong. Maybe it was around 1990. But I didn't show for myself. I was going to shows and helping people. Is what kind of got me in the show horse deal. I had some friends that showed a lot of horses in the quarter horse deal and the paint deal, and they got me going with them to help. And then that turned into like, why can't I just do this for myself? And so I started training a lot of horses then. I'd been at the saddle shop. It was the deal where I worked here and then trained in the evenings.
Okay.
And it just kind of grew and grew and grew until like in 2009, I quit the saddle shop because my horse deal had just got to be too big that I could handle part time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to train. I love that. So I went to training full time. So I was gone from the factory here for about 8 years. And then Mr. Cook got sick. And I guess I come back to help him in 17. And then he passed away in 19. So Adam bought the company in 20 and made me a really good deal to stay. So I pretty much just stayed with the company from there on out. And then sent what few horses I had left for customers when I decided to stay with Adam. I think 2020 was the last world show I went to. And then I just got rid of all the customers, sent them elsewhere, and just kind of focused on the saddle shop. And then training-wise, I mean, I just started doing it for myself then.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd buy several geldings or mares or whatever, make them and sell them is kind of what we've been doing.
Well, so in what you just told me, I feel like I have 15 questions to ask you about what you just told me. So,
Well, I mean, I kind of rambled through it and skipped
no,
some stuff,
you
so
did. You
absolutely,
went.
whatever you need.
The first thing is tell us about Mr. Cook and the history of Billy Cook saddles, because I knew of Billy Cook growing up. So, those saddles have been
We all
around for,
did, yeah.
yeah. Give
Yeah.
me your experience and your experience with the company, and then kind of the big historical picture of Billy Cook saddles.
Okay, well, the quick version of my deal is my dad knew Mr. Cook from when he had his shop in Greenville. And I was kind of at that point, in 1990, I was 20 years old. So I was kind of in between what I wanted to do and so forth. So Billy actually was moving his company to Oklahoma, to the hometown I live in, was moving it here. And my dad and him got together and they decided that I needed to go to work for this company. And originally I'd signed on. What I was told in the beginning was that I was going to basically rep Oklahoma for him, be a sales rep, which I knew nothing of. And, all this time later, I've never left the shop. So it turned into the, I went through, learned everything there was in the shop in the beginning. He would just have me work for a month or whatever in each department until I kind of knew everything how the shop worked. We built saddles for a long time, and then, but gradually it turned into where I was kind of doing, running the shop as far as like ordering materials, dealing with the customers on the phone, taking care of the quality. I mean, just pretty much was, hot shot and everything here. And that's just kind of where it turned into. It turned into where I was dealing with 99% of the customers on the phone and doing everything I'm talking. It just kept growing to where he loved it because then he could stay out there and work on saddles and play. He loved the tool and he loved to build saddles. So, and he could do that. And then I would take all the other stress off of him to do it. So that's kind of what it turned into here. As far as the company goes, I mean, I don't know a ton of the history. Mr. Cook used to tell stories when he was in Greenville, but he, he started off working for Potts Longhorn, and built a saddle there that was a Billy Cook saddlery saddle while he was with that company. Longhorn went bankrupt. When they went bankrupt, that's when he went on his own and started building his Billy Cook Maker Greenville, Texas saddles. He was there for, and I honestly don't know the years on this enough to specify, but he worked there for a while until actually in the late 80s. In the late 80s, he kind of got in some financial trouble, so he was looking for kind of a start over. And the community here where I live, they were trying to bring in new businesses, so the banker that was over that actually knew Billy a little bit, so they all got together and decided to move him to Sulphur. So he opened his factory here and started building saddles here. Like the early 1991 is when we started actually producing saddles. And but as far as, Billy's built saddles, I've heard stories for, I mean, since he was like 19 years old. He's worked for saddle companies or whatever, and then he passed away at 89. So that's a lot of years of building saddles.
And what kind of saddles, what's the bread and butter? What was the bread and butter of Billy Cook back when Mr. Cook was making them? And where are you all now? What are you shooting for?
Bread and butter, I think in his early career was roping saddles. He built a lot of ropers, and barrel saddles. That was kind of the two bread and butters when he started off. Everything's evolved, and we make so many different varieties of saddles even today. Probably our bread and butter today is we sell a lot of barrel racing saddles. We sell a lot of cowboy saddles, like ranch saddles. I'd say our ranch saddles might be our bread and butter today. What I'm trying to grow since I've been back to the company is I want our roping business back, because I rope and that's something what I most relate to, is why I'm really trying to get our roping business going again. And a little quick history is Billy for years got caught up and what I feel like I'm trying to change with the history of this company is Billy got caught up in years of trying to mass produce saddles and numbers become what he pushed for, how many he could make and so forth. And so he to do that, he let the quality fall off greatly. and it just become like a shop made, you know, throw together saddle, which really hurt his reputation, in my opinion. So since I've been back now and trying to change him with Adam, you know, Adam's basically opened the gates and untied my hands and let me do what I want. So we've been really trying to get the quality back like it has been, you know, bring the name back to Billy Cook like it once was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been a big thing for me. So for me, my personal favorite is I want to grow the roping business back.
You know,
so we started building the Jody Raymer collection again, which is a total custom top to bottom. You know, that's the one Tate was riding. You know, the total custom top to bottom. Back, you know, I feel like we're building a roping saddle. Now, that particular saddle, I feel like, is as good as anybody in the world. And then even our shop saddles and our roping saddles, we've changed the tree designs. We've changed the way we do a lot of things. We've really tried to bring the quality back. So the big thing with being back here at Billy's now is really get the quality back where it needs to be. You know, we're still going to be, I mean, everybody still has shop style saddles, but it's just, you know, slow down, pay attention to detail, get everything back to where it used to be. And that's what we strive to do today.
Yeah. So what are you learning? You know, your saddles, the ones I saw Tate riding, were absolutely beautiful and look like custom saddles. Mm-hmm. As far as the tree and what's going into it from the rope horse perspective, what are you doing to make it modern for the roper that has Futurity horses or the World Series guy that's got, you know, roping for 300,000? Talk about the construction of those saddles.
You know, the for me, and I think why this is such a important thing for me is because I'd lived this life for a long time, you know, with the training and so forth. And, you know, when you're riding, somebody sends you a $100,000 stud that, you know, that they wanted, that didn't make a cut or a rein or whatever, then they've got a lot invested in. The worst thing you can do is put a crap saddle on him or something that doesn't fit. And then it makes it really hard in your training process to, if your saddles don't work and your horses are hurting and so forth, it just makes the training impossible.
Yeah.
You know, and plus you're not really doing justice to a customer that's trying to spend money with you and paying you for your time and to take care of their horses and to produce something out of their horses. You know, so the fit is a big thing that matters. Horses have changed tremendously over years. You know, I mean, now horses are a lot stouter made. They're, you know, there's a lot to them. So with this particular tree that we're talking about, you know, Bowden makes those trees for me, and I've used Bowden trees on anything custom or my personal stuff for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've changed the tree. It's a kind of an association type front, but it's got a lot of flare in the bar. It seems to fit majority of horses you put it on. Some of, you know, every horse, you know, you can have 20 horses in your barn and you got 20 totally different backs. So what we strive to do, or what I try to do is I want to fit the bigger end of those horses. And then you can pad a little bit if you've got something you need to be down, you know, but you know, we can also have those trees tweaked if we need to, too, you know, to change the size, but we use a 7-inch gullet and a full bar in those trees. Just because I feel like that, you know, with all the horses I rode over the years, that bar worked the best for me. I felt like I had more success out of that bar than anything else. Then as far as the construction of the saddle goes, I mean, it's all hand cut, hand fit, skirts beat in, real wool. I mean, all the old extra things that you could do to one that the people kind of skip today, we try to go back and do it very traditional with them saddles. You know, we want them to fit the rider good. We try to build a little taper in the seat. And everybody we build for, we can tweak that a little bit. But, you know, we're trying to make something that everybody's comfortable with. We make them hard seats, padded seats, whatever we want. But we seem to have a lot of success with that saddle.
Sure. So,
I'm a big believer in it. I wouldn't have put my name on it because, you know, I've used that tree in that style. I've been riding those for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just feel comfortable, and that's kind of my go-to, you know.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Genuine Billy Cook Saddles, the finest handmade saddles in tack at the fairest prices. World famous since 1953, Billy Cook Saddles continue to be built in the USA by horsemen for horsemen. In 2020, Genuine Billy Cook was revitalized and has been operating under a new business model aimed at producing the highest quality to ensure maximum performance while keeping true to Western horsemanship traditions. Check out genuinebillycook.com for the finest handmade saddles and tack and the fairest prices. That's genuinebillycook.com.
Now, as far as you guys have kind of hooked your wagon, for lack of a better phrase, to Tate, and as far as what he's got going in the futurity business and the training business, what about Tate's, his work ethic, what about the way he trains, what about the way he communicates was appealing to you to be involved with Tate?
You know, I got to know Tate right kind of at the end. I knew Tate because we have a mutual friend. I mean, we're both really good friends with the Phillip boys, John and Shane. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of got to know Tate. And just to watch from afar at what he was trying to do, it reminded me of myself whenever I started showing horses. You know, you kind of started at the bottom, and Tate was working. And he was very humble. You know, he would quiz me all the time on different things or what he could do to improve his stuff. And you could just see it evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, he was doing better. The rope horse deal took off. Tate ropes extremely well. You know, his training business he's just gradually growing. And I mean, and even today versus how he'll be in 5 or 6 years, we'll be talking totally different in 5 or 6 years because he keeps gaining knowledge, understanding by doing it. He just seemed like the right person to rep what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, he's humble. I mean, he's the same. He's easy to talk to. He wants to do good. He wants to get a name for him, and he's done well so far.
Mm-hmm.
He's done really well. So I just felt like with Tate was a guy that was going to be true blue to us, and he's easy for me to talk to. You know, if we need to tweak something, he can tell me what he's thinking, and then I can convert it to what it is, and you know, and get to go rope with him and stuff, and try to help him with his horses where I can. I mean, I just felt like he'd be a great ambassador for what I was trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. He's kind of, like you said, he's real humble and low key. So you don't always know that Tate knows as much as he does. But we just filmed with him for a series that we're getting ready to drop with you guys. And that was, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it. We did it on parts of the body throughout parts of the run. So it's a way to kind of talk about the way that the horse needs to be free and be able to move with his saddle, but also, you know, how Tate gets their shoulders free in the box, how he gets them in the bridle in the box, how he gets their rib cage free. He really is super knowledgeable about all that stuff. So I'm excited for you to see it too.
Absolutely. And I felt so bad that I didn't get to be there. I was wanting to be there for that so bad.
It was really cold. So you didn't.
It was cold.
Picked a good day to miss. It was freezing.
No, but what I know of Tate and everything that we've done has been great. You know, I mean, we don't just talk saddles, you know, we talk horses and we talk, you know, just the training programs. And I mean, he's really good to pick my brain the best I can, you know, and I try to help him what I can. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different ways to skin a cat, but he's very humble. And I love that part of him. I felt like me, like when I was starting off, it kind of reminded me of me because I would try to learn from everybody I could because I wanted to be the best I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the same thing in Tate. You know, Tate does really well with that stuff and he does great. I mean, he's done a really good job with everything he's done. So we're glad to have him on our side.
Sure. Now, on the rope horse, I knew you when I first knew who you were was when you were judging. Do you judge at all still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I still judge. I think I have to judge the futurity that's going to be in Oklahoma City here end of May, mm-hmm. 1st of June, something like that. Whenever the red bud is, I know I have to judge those.
Sure.
So, I mean, I could judge more. They call me quite a bit to judge more.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sometimes it doesn't fit into my schedule to do it as much as I want to. But I enjoy the judging. I feel like that I can kind of keep up with what's going on, and I feel like I have a very, very open mind to the new styles and everything. Because mm-hmm. that was always something that frustrated me a little bit when I was showing so much. Is I feel like that people would get so stuck in what they felt like they should be. But you kind of got to see every horse is a little different, you know. And as long as people are going through the maneuvers like you want to see them, and it keeps me part of what's going on without showing a whole lot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of keeps me involved, and you know, it's just a neat thing. I've enjoyed the judging, and I was pretty pretty nervous about it the first time I started judging, but it's got to, and I still get kind of nervous when I judge because you don't want to, you always want to do the right thing and
sure.
so forth. But I have enjoyed the judging part of it. It's kept me in contact and kept me involved, and I do enjoy it.
One of the things that I asked Tate to describe while we were there was his ideal run. Like, do you have an ideal head horse run and an ideal head or heel horse run that you can like rattle off easily? Or is it just kind of a feel or something that you see? What are you looking for maybe people who don't understand what's going on the show side of things?
Right. Well, with the rope horse maturities, it's a lot different now than it was like in the AQHA when I was showing, which is so much better because I felt like when I was first starting to show the run that they were trying to set up in the heading in the AQHA was not a horse that you were going to ride necessarily at a jackpot. You know, and it was hard to take the horse to two different things because of the way they had it set up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so my ideal run, if I can explain it the best I can, is first thing you look for is you judge the box first. So we're always wanting something that's pretty quiet, pretty still, you know, everything is completely rider control in the box. You know, you want him quiet in his hands, set in the corner quietly to be able to score as quiet as he can and then leave off the rider's head.
When do you start watching them? Do you start watching them as they're walking toward the box or do you start?
Not necessarily walking toward the box. I mean, you watch the whole thing, but I don't really start judging much until they get close to walking in the box.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, unless you get a refusal or something where they're going to the box and they're not necessarily wanting to go in, then you kind of have to start judging there. But for me, most horses will walk in the box fairly quiet. You know, it's when you turn around is where you start noticing when you walk around the corner and you start facing the box to set them up for the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a horse that stays quiet, keeps his head down, doesn't get too nervy, will get to the box without a lot of help, to the corner without a lot of help, and just stand there quiet in his hands. I mean, that's what's the ideal part for me is to stand there as quiet as he can. And then when the gates bang and he sees his start, when the rider puts his hand down, the header puts his hand down, you want that horse to leave as flat as he can, you know, run into his position. So quiet in the box, really strong run. I want them to run where they are. Then as they start getting close, I like to see those horses start letting up just a little bit and the rider have to push them a little bit in. To me, that horse is paying attention to what he's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Once he catches one, I personally like it to be, and this is the part that's kind of hard to explain, is I want him to drag a leg a little bit to get a hold with the leg. The back leg down,
mm-hmm.
and be making his move to the left at the same time. Just a nice fluid motion, you know, like the old AQHA would be almost a steer stop style and then take off. You know, everything we want today is, you know, guys are competing on these horses too. So you want that butt down, leg down, moving to the left the whole time as they're keeping their shoulders up in their hands. Once those guys get the steer's head bent and get him set up like they want, then they can kind of let the horse fall into the log, pull off straight, you know, never completely straight. Like, you don't want the rope completely over his butt because it hurts your facing a little bit.
Sure.
And then them horses that stay flat and level, let them handle them steers. And once the heeler catches, to me, I like to see either way's fine with me. I'm not super picky on how I want them to face. Some horses face better, like to get a leg down and come around their leg. Some horses face better if they clear their hindquarters and then finish with their front.
Yeah.
So to me, as long as it's effortless, and I mean, it's smooth and it gets to a tight rope, I'm okay with either one. I mean, I can score one as high as I can the other one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to know. But, yeah, I'm always curious about that.
Just to finish. But, mm-hmm. you know, as a trainer, you know, you have horses that can do it one way easier than they can another way. So I think you have to kind of go with what your horse's strengths are there when you come to facing.
Gotcha. Very good. And then on the heel horse side, I mean, how much slide are you looking for? How much cow? Like, what are you judging on the heel horse side?
You know, for me, slide doesn't matter so much to me as how much they slide. To me, when I'm judging the same thing. I want a quiet heel horse to go in the box.
Mm-hmm.
I want a heel horse that can score as good as a head horse, can get out and get in position down the pen. I really look for them horses to kind of break down in the corner as they're coming in, to kind of climb around the corner on their hind end, but yet not lose their distance to the cow. I want them to be looking for it with the riders not having to help him. He can be focusing on roping, and them horses to get straight right there and square off. And then when Taylor goes to the bottom with, when he goes to the bottom with his heel rope, I want to see them horses go to the bottom too.
Yeah.
They don't have to slide a lot to me. I mean, it's more about getting in, you know, anchoring at the right time. And then to, when the jerk hits them, to stand there and take it, you know, and not, you know, not get tipped up on their toes and, you know, not get pulled sideways. You know, I want their head straight, their bodies to be in line with the target. So, I mean, you try to just, for me, I just try to set it up. I know what I like in my mind. You know, every horse has got a variation of that. And you know, there's always, you know, there's always steers that are harder to do. And some of those steers that are like really run or get away from a heeler, you know, you try to bonus those horses that can get to them, you know, the difficulty of the run. Same with head horses. You know, degree of difficulty is always something I look for. You know, I just want to see it easy. I mean, as showing it before, you want a horse that gives, makes it as easy for you to do your job as you can.
Sure.
So that's what I'm looking for in the, you know, in a ballpark vision of a good head and heel horse run.
Yeah.
It's total control the whole time. I want to see that horse under control. I don't want to see a rider having to rope around the horse. And that's something with the heel horses that's tough today sometimes.
Yeah.
Everybody that's showing ropes so good, you know, they can rope around some of that stuff, you know, so it's, I try to see, it's easier for me to see the horses that the guys enjoy riding and ride around and do a good job versus the ones that are having to try to rope around a horse.
Yeah, I understand. Now, I guess bringing it back around to Billy Cook, if somebody wants to order a saddle, what's the process as far as, or can you call in and just have one shipped the next day, or is it all a custom process?
We offer both. We do build some inventory saddles. We do have a few saddles built up in inventory that you can call, and if I have everything like you want, we can ship it immediately. And then there's also the process where they can call and go through it with me. We can sit down and build them a saddle from scratch. Everything they want, exactly personalized to them. We offer both ways.
Got it. And what do you want to see, like, as far as, like, five-year goals for Billy Cook? Where are you headed with the team rep and market in this space?
Well, I just want to get back to a lot of people riding our saddles, a lot of people trusting the brand again.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to see it grow. You know, just, you know, I never want it to be, you know, it's not that I don't. It's never going to be what it once was. You know, we're going to control it a lot better now. Keep the quality like it is. And I just want it, like everything else, just to start growing and to be back to that reputable saddle that people used to have.
Yeah.
That's what my goal is with, is to try to get it back going and to what it once was.
I love it. Now, you said you aren't good at interviews and you're a liar. So that's one thing that people should.
I've babbled a lot in this interview.
No, so. You've done great, Jody.
Hopefully you can edit it while it needs to be edited.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you again to our sponsors at Genuine Billy Cook Saddles, the finest handmade saddles and tack at the fairest prices. World famous since 1953, Billy Cook Saddles continue to be built in the USA by horsemen for horsemen. In 2020, Genuine Billy Cook Saddles was revitalized and has been operating under a new business model aimed at producing the highest quality to ensure maximum performance while keeping true to Western horsemanship traditions. That's genuinebillycook.com for the finest handmade saddles and tack at the fairest prices. Well, thank you all for making it through another episode of The Score. Sure appreciate you. 7 years, I think, at this job, at this specific podcasting job. I'm not going to tell you how many years at this actual job with the Team Roping Journal and Spindwin before that. But it absolutely amazes me, all the support you guys give. You give Kendra tons of support. She's been here since 1997 with us. We're so grateful for Kendra at the Team Roping Journal. And then I have been here since 2010. So the fact that you all still want to listen to, read the content that we put out is absolutely amazing. We're so grateful for you. We are grateful to work in the team roping industry. Oh, and I am very grateful for Craig Jones, who is editing this podcast week in and week out. He tolerates me coming in hot when it comes to having a few episodes late at night before they need to air. He's kind of a champ as far as editing, making us sound as professional as possible. So thanks, Craig. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk at you in a couple weeks.